Hey there, Jizzy Woman. Welcome to the Love in the Skin You're In Blog Talk Radio Show. And I'm your host,
Love
Andrea
Talk
Amador.
Radio.
I ain't got nothing but three things to say about that.
Jizzy Woman, welcome to the Love in the Skin You're In Blog Talk Radio Show. I'm your host, Andrea Amador. I'm the author of the book, Love in the Skin You're In, and I'm a curvy and confident body image expert and empowerment coach. And I'm here walking the walk and talking the talk of body acceptance and personal power. And what I mean by that is that I'm here to share my stories with you of times that I've learned in my life things that places where I've been disempowered and I didn't stand in a place of power. And from learning that, I'm eager to share with you how you can change the way that you show up in your life. I'm offering my experiences as a gift to you so that you'll be able to see yourself from fresh eyes, from loving eyes. Today, I want so much to talk with you about the whole idea of going beyond dieting and deprivation. I want to encourage you to call in and speak with me. My number is 760-888-5736. The topic today is talking about moving beyond dieting. I want you to toss the scale and stock the cupboards and just the tape measure and the scale and your diet books, goodbye. I've done that, and I want so much to share with you the freedom that comes from being able to move past thinking of yourself as someone who's flawed and somebody who doesn't fit in, and that dieting is the solution to all of your problems. Because, girl, let me tell you, it's really not. What dieting has done for you, most likely, especially if you're in a place where you're hurting, is it has put blinders on you, and it has prevented you from looking around and seeing what's going on in your life. If you're having a hard time with dieting, and if you're finding that you're running to food and looking to food as a solution, a way of hiding or a way of calming yourself or rewarding yourself for all the things that you do, I really want you to look at that as a way of your body talking to you and saying that you need a change. Something needs to change in you. It is such a short, small, rare minority of people who are able to be successful in dieting. And I'm thinking that if you're here listening to this show, Loving the Skin You're In, it's likely that you have, I'm thinking that you probably haven't found that success that you want through dieting. That you're coming as a way of looking for a new path to find love and acceptance with yourself. There is a next, and there is something that comes beyond dieting. And what I want you to understand is the food issues that you face are really just a metaphor for what's going on in your life. I want to hear from you. My number is 760-888-5736. What I learned in my life is that for so many years, I was caught up in the belief that my problem was my fat thighs. I've always been a curvy girl. even when I was way, way down to a size 6, I still had much, much bigger thighs than my waist. And I was never happy with my body the way that it was. I always wanted more. Well, in my case, I always wanted less. I wanted to be less. If I was a size 10, I wanted to be a size 6. If I was a size 6, I wanted to be a size 4. I really want you to understand that that's a torturous place to be in. Are you in that place? Are you finding yourself completely overwhelmed and frustrated with food? And feeling out of control and anxious whenever you think about how much you eat and the foods that you want to eat. Like, for example, I'd love to hear from you. Tell me, what are some of the foods that you love? Maybe it's a food that you absolutely adore, but you've been trying so hard to keep it away. Like, you know, try to arm wrestle down your craving. Say, no, I'm not really, really hungry. I don't really want it. But the truth is something's driving you. Something's driving that urge. And up until now, I'm sure that you've been believing the thing that's been driving your cravings and driving that urge to eat is something that is a part of you that is a lesser, let's see. Not lesser, but if you think in terms of strength, you may tend to think that that's a part of you that has, brain drain, hello. When you have difficulty being strong, but a weaker part of yourself, a part of you that wants and feels needy and feels hungry for something. This week, I was involved in Michelle Schaefer and Michelle Seizem's Ultimate Blog Challenge. And through that, I met an absolutely wonderful lady. Her name is, Emily, I'm sorry, I'm going to mess up your last name. But her name is Emily. And Emily was sharing in her blog about her understanding of what binges are and the binges that she struggled with throughout her life. And she used an acronym that I'm not familiar with that I'll share with you because it just like bowled me over. Binge. Because I'm not good enough. Think about every time you felt the need, every time that you felt the urge to run for food, to look for that as your solace, as your answer. Deep down, if you would really, really check in with yourself, wouldn't it be because you felt you weren't enough? Maybe it's because you felt that you weren't enough to be confident enough to demand the salary that you felt that you were worth, or to ask somebody to do something for you, or to say no to someone who is overburdening you with requests. As women, we tend to think that it's our responsibility to take care of everybody, to make sure that everybody's nice and happy and relaxed, that the kids are fine and they're put to bed and they're sleeping, and that the husband's fine, he's taken care of, and that we're running businesses, and we're doing so many things, spinning in our orbit. But it's a very rare occasion for us to stop and to take a breath and to realize that there's something that we need. Many times my clients struggle with feelings around guilt because they tend to binge after, they call it like reward binges, after everything's done and the family's taken care of. Oh, wow, you know, put your feet up on the sofa, chocolate, time for me. But that's not really a way of taking care of yourself. But I'm kind of getting ahead of myself. Because that's an understanding that you will have in the process. But the first thing you need to do to begin the process of transforming your life is to get out of the patterns that are causing you so much pain. There are things that we do in a way, in an attempt to deal with the anxiety in our lives. Maybe it's to deal with the sadness or the pain or the hurt, the feeling of separation or loneliness. We do things to cope with our anxiety, and the things that we do are based on what our families have done, what we have seen our families do. So if you're used to, if you've had the experience of being in a family that has held everything in and tried to keep control of everything and felt, if you felt that it was unsafe to let yourself be imperfect in that kind of an environment, it's very likely that you've taken on a lot of the characteristics of the people that you have tried so hard not to duplicate, to take the things that you have seen that have made impressions on you and to make that part of you. We do things so many times without even realizing it. Our subconscious minds, you know, as children, we're like sponges. We're taking everything in and we're learning and we're processing so much information. And it's all based on wanting to feel wanted, wanting to feel loved. So we associate connections that don't necessarily serve us into adulthood. Many times we see situations where we live with people who are unhappy and we can feel the tension in our bodies. We can feel the need to connect, but we don't see that connection between those people. So what people do is they look for those connections in other places. If you don't feel loved, if you don't feel safe, then you will do whatever it is that you can and whatever it is that you have seen other people in the course of your growing up, in the course of your childhood to adulthood, what you have seen people do around you, you will tend to do the same thing. So if you're used to seeing people use food as a way of dealing with their anxiety or frustration, it's very, very likely that you will do the same thing. And it's a very common pattern for women, oh my gosh, for so many years, to look at their value and to equate their value with their ability to be attractive or to be beautiful. You know, it's one thing for the man of the family to use his brains and to go out and, you know, make his mark in the world by using his intellect. But for so many years, women have been believed, women have believed, and they have, you know, been conditioned to believe that their place is in the home. Now, there are so many of us who don't buy into that at all, and there's just no way. We don't want to do that. We're not going to do that. We're business women. We're running our own businesses, and we're taking care of our families. Yes, that's true. But still, inside of your brain, in the primitive part of your brain, where your emotions are, where your subconscious mind is, there's likely that there's programs that are running about your role in society. Remember, my number is 760-888-5736. And when you think about your role within the family or within society as being something that inhibits you in some way, you will find a way of acting out, a way of getting what it is that you need. I was having lunch with a friend today. We're working on co-presenting a seminar on forgiveness, and we were talking. Her name is Reverend Carrie Jackson. And we were talking about the different things that people do to deal with the anxiety in their life. And she helped me to expand my definition to really look and see how this anxiety affects people in different ways. She helped me to really look in a much more compassionate way at people without judging them. Particularly what she was talking about was, and I would love it if you would call me, 760-888-5736. She was talking about the fact that everybody has different ways of dealing with the anxiety, with the insanity, with the chaos in their life, in their brain, whatever it is that's going on. My thing has always been food. During the times when I thought that I had the food thing under control, then I just started spending money like water, and shopping became my thing. In an earlier episode, I talked about the whack-a-mole, that like carnival game that you can play where you have a bat in your hand and there's this little like mole-like creature, robot mole-like creature that pops up out of different holes on a grid that has all of these holes. And every time you whack the mole, the robot, it pops up somewhere else. So in my case, when I was no longer paying such close attention, no, really wasn't even attention, it was obsession. When I wasn't any longer obsessed about losing weight, that's when I kind of felt the ability to kind of roll back and kind of enjoy a little bit. So I decided, oh, well, then I'm going to take money and I'm going to spend money on all these great clothes. But it was that same anxiety that was working in me, because it got to an insane point where I went into $100,000 worth of debt. Because in the same way that I struggled with finding a peaceful ground in my relationship with food, the same issues around money. Dr. Jackson was talking about her experience in working with families where there are pedophiles. And let me tell you, I share this with you with the greatest degree of compassion if, like me, you are also an abuse survivor. It was so shocking to me to hear Carrie talk about the fact that these pedophiles, people who prey on children, that the same kind of anxiety and the same kind of drive and compulsion that some people have to grab that donut or to light up a cigarette or to have a drink, it's the same pressure that goes on with a pedophile. Only their drug of choice is something completely different. What I want you to understand is, and I know that I've gone far afield in sharing this with you, but what I want you to think about is I want you to realize that the relationship that you now have with food, if you're struggling, if you're in pain, if you feel like it's impossible for you to feel comfortable or at ease around a bag of open potato chips or a plate of homemade brownies or anything that it is that you consider to be temptation, that means that that anxiety, that pulsing energy in you, that compulsion that is driving you is too hard. You're not able to see the object of your desire because one is too many and a million will never be enough. Because it's not really the food that you're looking for. You're looking for something else. The same way that people try to find peace and a sense of safety in taking that drink or snorting cocaine or going shopping, that is the same kind of pressure, internal pressure, that people feel when they are compulsed by something. I want you to understand that the relationship that you have with food, if you feel the need, if you feel needy around food, if you feel the need that you have to be controlled and kept accountable through going and getting weighed or being told that you should weigh one thing and not another, it's you giving your subconscious mind the message that you cannot trust yourself. Now, I want you to be clear that I am not directing this at you. If you are doing great with dieting and you're loving it and you're not feeling any pain at all, no, no, no. I am talking to you specifically. If you've been going for years and years and years and going on diets and off diets, every Saturday and Sunday you're off the diet, bam, back on, 12 o'clock midnight or early in the morning on Monday, you're back on. That's the whack-a-mole that I'm talking about, trying to hold it in until the dam bursts. I'd like to share a story with you of what was the impetus for my decision for deciding to completely stop dieting. After about a year of This was back in 2006 or so. After about a year of me doing a lot of traveling and running around and not really being very present as far as my family goes, I was working to set up a nonprofit organization to benefit abused women and kids. I had an appointment to take my daughter to the doctor. And prior to that, Carol was 10 years old at the time. Prior to that, I had seen some signs where my sweet little happy girl, who was very confident and felt good about herself, where things were starting to change. Things were shifting. I had walked into the bathroom a couple times and seen candy wrappers in the vanity wastebasket. And for some reason, it didn't go off. The warning switch didn't go off. And then there were other times when I would walk into the room and all of a sudden, a very calm and happy expression turned to one of fear. At that time, that was the cocky place. That's where I was in a very cocky place in terms of my own weight. I had been keeping 50 pounds off for almost 6 years. And during that time, I was working out with the trainer and spending a couple hours at the gym. And my disordered and dysfunctional eating was so outrageous. But I didn't realize that. I would go through these times when I would just like eat nothing but vegetables or clear soup or, you know, counting and depriving and holding so much. And then, bam, weekends would come and I'd kind of lose my mind. I'd just basically stuff like a whole bag of Cheetos in my mouth. And so my little girl was seeing me act out in this way. She would hear me talk about, oh, you know, you got to count points, you got to watch what you eat, don't eat all that rice, I don't want you eating potato chips anymore, all of this nonsense stuff. She would hear me say one thing, and then come a certain time when I could no longer stand the depression any longer, I would, like, lose my freaking mind, and I would eat everything. Hand to mouth. And so Carol was getting this image of say as I do, but don't do as I do. Say as I do, do as I say, but don't do as I do. Very hypocritical. And what it was coming from was my own early history with dieting, because I started dieting way back when I was 10 years old. The doctor put me on a diet. And in their very, very impassioned wanting to take care of me, my father and my stepmother, Rosie, they were kind of desperate. They didn't quite know what to do with the fat little girl. So they thought that the best way of handling it would be to take an intimidating approach. You better not gain any more weight. Oh, no, you put away, you can't eat those candies. Oh, no. And so I began to live with deprivation way, way early on. But what they didn't know was that years earlier, I had been sexually abused. And that had set off the series of events that associated in my mind that food was comfort. It was my way of keeping the men, the people who would hurt me, at bay. It was my very young, fearful self that rationalized that, well, if I, you know, eat all of this food, then I'm going to be so fat, nobody will want to touch me. Well, it didn't quite work out that way. So there were two things that were working on me. There was the idea that, well, my value is based on my beauty and that I won't be able to be lovable unless I'm beautiful and thin. And two, there was this tremendous fear of not being safe. So my daughter was getting these messages through my behavior. And I was there with her at the doctor's office. And Dr. Kessler had said, you know, Mrs. Amador, you really, really have to start watching what Kara's eating. And she shouldn't be eating a lot of fattening foods and, you know, cut out the junk food and cut out the fruit juice and the sodas and all of that. And I thought about this. And earlier, I had had a conversation in a networking group with a gentleman named Doc Frost. And Doc Frost had, I guess you could say, he shifted a paradigm for me. Doc Frost was retiring from a 25-year career of working with men and women and helping to treat them of eating disorders. And in the group, Doc had told me of the most effective way of being able to do that was to be able to give the patients, because they were residents, to give the patients the freedom to recognize that they could eat whatever it is that they wanted. He explained to me that it started with this one particular patient of his. She was a nurse. And it was, I don't remember, I think it was in the 80s or so. And the Center for Change, that's where he worked. He said that one of the books that they had read, oh, guys, come on, call me, 760-888-5736. One of the books that they had read and that they were putting to use by teaching the clients how to change their way of thinking around food was Intuitive Eating, a revolutionary program that works. And that was written by Evelyn Triboli and Elise Reich. The whole idea behind the book Intuitive Eating is that you learn how to eat in a fresh way. You learn how to eat in accordance with and in respect of your body's hunger. It means that you connect back with your body and you start listening to your hunger. And no food is off limits, and no food is lesser or greater in terms of value. It's all the same. A Snickers and a salad is all the same to your body. If you're craving a Snickers and you eat a salad, you're shortchanging yourself. If you're craving a salad and you eat a Snickers, you're shortchanging yourself. It really is about being honoring of yourself by listening to what your body is saying. Now, you would think that your body would just be, if you've been deprived for any length of time and, if you've been deprived for any length of time and you have felt as though you couldn't trust yourself around food, and you've been used to preventing yourself from being exposed to temptation, it's likely that you have gone the route of trying to ignore that you want something. So if Snickers is your go-to, and that's the thing that, oh my gosh, really, really curls your toes and you love Snickers, but you know that they have a certain fat content and calorie content and that you've gained weight because you couldn't seem to stop overeating them, you would tend to think that Snickers are the enemy, that the problem is Snickers, that the problem is your inability to control yourself around Snickers. Nothing could be further from the truth. You have been lied to if you think that's the case. So Doc Frost was telling me that Kara's issues around food were present because I, as her mother, had tremendous issues around food. And because I struggled with my own relationship with food, it was just natural that my daughter would pick up the baton and the legacy would live on. He said that in order for Kara to start to change the way that she relates to food, I had to first begin to change the way I related to food. And by that point, since I had been dieting since 10 years old, 2006, I was 34. 34 or 44, I don't know, whatever. You do the math. I had been so incredibly exhausted by the push me, pull you forces of constant vigilance required through dieting, the constant writing things down and thinking about food and how many points and put it in the tracker and did I include all of the bites, licks, and tastes, account for everything. I was so exhausted with that, and I couldn't imagine going to my grave knowing that I would still not be able to face an open bag of potato chips. So I said to Doc, you know, I'm going to take a leap of faith, and I'm going to trust you. I'm going to ask you to please help me so I can also help my daughter and begin the healing. And Doc did help me. And the conversation that I had that day with my daughter was very, very different from the conversation that I had with my father when I was 10 years old, when he warned me against eating all of these fattening foods and to cut the fat off of my steak and to to stop drinking soda and all of these other things that were so readily available in our home. That's the insanity of it. Because my stepmother, Rosie, was able to eat whatever it is that she wanted, and she never, ever gained an ounce. But contrary to Rosie, my dad was very much the opposite. He was more like me, where he would say one thing and do another. He was a binger. So this is the behavior that I saw. But I was told, oh, no, you can't have those M&Ms. You can't have those potato chips. And this whole insanity arose from that. So that day when I took a leap and I told my daughter, you know what, honey? I trust you. And I have screwed up so badly with my body and the way that I feel about it because I feel so deeply ashamed that I don't have any control over food. And the whole idea of being thin, at that point I was a size 8, 160 pounds. The whole idea of achieving a certain goal and thinking, game over, I'm done, I've got it licked, is a lie. It is an absolute and complete lie. Because I was more obsessed than ever and desperate to hold on to what I had achieved. Every single thought that I had in my head was no longer around losing weight, but holding on to the loss that I had, feeling so panicked that the pounds would start to creep on, that I would no longer fit into the clothes that I loved. Nonsense. So crazy. So, What I want to tell you is that during the course of those days and the time that followed for both Kara and myself, led by Doc Frost and his guidance, he helped me to understand that food was not the issue. My daughter, she had such an easy time of it. It was like roller skates for her. Now, keep in mind, she was 10 years old at the time. And me, I told her, okay, honey, I'm going to trust you. I want you to start to listen to your body. Whatever it is that you can have, whatever it is that you want, you can have. I know you moms are thinking, are you freaking insane? I thought so too. But I hold this in memory of the insanity that I lived for so many years, and knowing without a doubt there was no way I was going to participate in letting my daughter live through the misery that I had, and reaching the point of hating myself so much and feeling so disempowered because I couldn't control myself around food. And food was just a metaphor. It was just a metaphor. Not only did I not trust myself to handle the temptation of food, I didn't trust myself to be able to speak up in a crowded room. Oh, forget a crowded room. If I had something to say to some person, it was such a major deal for me to say what was on my mind. To ask for what I wanted, to say no to somebody, unbelievable. I'd rather grab that Snickers bar and suck on that and let that put me to sleep until I forget, you know, that I felt this angst about saying something that was on my mind. So I didn't want my daughter to perpetuate the same kind of dysfunction as me and to use food as her crutch. As I mentioned, Kara had a pretty easy time of it. At first, she tested me. Her new way of eating tested my will. I remember a couple of mornings, she doesn't tend to eat breakfast, but at the time, she would eat breakfast, and she'd be having, like, a slice of chocolate cake and Reese's peanut butter cups and maybe soda with that. And like all of the mom instincts are like, are you crazy? This is insane. And then I realized, whoa. Let's look at the alternative. The alternative is living a life of dysfunction and getting to where you are, Andrea. So I pulled back and I didn't say anything. There was no judgment. There was no, oh, looks like you're getting fat. None of that. None of the stuff that I was used to getting from my own dad as his way of showing concern or worry. After, I'm going to say, probably about 2 months or so, maybe there was about 4 or 5 different really, really weird times where she would eat crazy things. And I started seeing that she would get into a habit of not being hungry when the family would sit down to eat. I respected that, and I told my daughter and everybody else, no, just respect Kara's wishes. It's really important that she get a sense that she can trust her body. After, I'm going to say, about 4 weeks or so, she completely changed, and she started craving carrots and vegetables and just different foods. To this day, we could have all of the chocolate in the house and everything else, and Kara turns her nose up at it. At parties, whenever there's a party or something in school, everybody around her freaks out because she's just not interested in eating that kind of stuff. Why? Why? Because Kara didn't live the kind of life of dysfunction around food that I did. I had so many associations from which I could draw upon to give me the justification that food means safety. For her, food found its place. Food found its rightful order in priorities. It wasn't that important to her. Naturally, her weight started dropping. For me, it was very, very different. Because from the time that I started making the choice to stop dieting, oh my God, it was like a non-stop party. I remember the panic that I went through when I went to the supermarket, like the first day. I'm buying all of this stuff, like Swanson chicken pot pie and all of these fixings to make fresh macaroni and cheese and, oh, all of the sausages and the hot dogs, the Hebrew National hot dogs that I love, and steak, hello, with fat, lots of it. All of these things that I would eat. And as much as I tried to tune in and listen to my hunger, I couldn't do it. I couldn't do it. I was becoming an incredibly discriminating eater. The same way that Carol was becoming really discriminating and, you know, she kind of realized that she wasn't into a lot of sweets and stuff, I got really discriminating in terms of realizing, ooh, that's too stale. That tastes too cheesy. That tastes too shrimpy. That tastes too dry, too wet, too cold, too hot, too sweet. Oh, my gosh, so many twos in the spectrum. It was wonderful, and it was such a sense of pride and delight that I had by being able to have this new level of control around food. However, even though I was discriminating, for those foods that still called to me, those foods that I felt enslaved by, can we say chips? I could not get enough of them. And I kept eating and eating. And my justification was, I'm listening to my hunger. I remember a time when I would be eating for every hour of the day. And I swore, I absolutely swore that this was hunger. You can imagine that I just blew up. I gained like 40 pounds after holding a weight loss of 50 pounds for almost 6 years. I was devastated. I wanted to die. Come on, guys, give me a call, 760-888-5736. We're talking about looking at a new paradigm around food, going beyond dieting and deprivation. I'm sharing my experience with you of how and why I decided to make the choice. And in a couple of weeks, on April 17th, my guest is going to be Gillian Hood-Gabrielson of Healthier Outcomes, and Gillian is going to be talking about intuitive eating and telling you the specific how-tos of doing that. And right around non-dieting week, I think it's May 3rd, on May 2nd, Gillian and I are going to be coming together and doing a one-time program, and it will give you a whole new opportunity to see non-dieting from a completely fresh perspective. So let me go on with my story for a little bit. As I continued along eating unbound by anything, just eating and justifying that it was my hunger that I was feeling, I was also doing a lot of studying at the time. And one of the programs that I looked to was Dr. Nancy Bonus' Beyond Dieting program. And Nancy Bonus had drawn together so many fabulous threads of discovery where it was important to integrate visualization with mindful awareness, with intention, all of these things in the context of a non-diet weight control. And I started to realize that the feelings that I was calling hunger, that wasn't hunger at all. She indicated that when you feel sad or when you feel lonely or you're grieving, that those feelings of hunger that you get, they feel like empty pits. And it's very, very easy for the body to confuse that with the sensation of hunger. And that's when I started to learn how to use the emotional freedom technique that I've shared with you, the simple tapping process, which is really a marriage of acupressure points, tapping on different acupressure points on your body at the same time that you're thinking about something. It changes the way that your brain pairs up information, and something that's upsetting to you will neutralize. I started to realize that the real reason behind my out-of-control eating was because I was desperately unhappy. And I had realized how I was being taken advantage of in a work situation. And I felt completely powerless in that place. And I was letting it persist. I didn't feel strong enough or confident enough to speak up. And I was devastated. As I continued to move forward and I started learning more about it, I sought out the help of one of my NLP mentors, Connie Ray Andreas. And I asked her, why am I struggling so much with this? And she said, well, it's because you're judging the things that you're doing as being bad. The fact that you're overeating, you're thinking that it's bad, when in fact it's just your body doing its very best to do what it can to help you, to help you to deal with the stress in the way that you know. Wow. Today's episode got away from me. I would love to hear you call me. My number is 760-888-5736. Next week, we will be talking to Eric Huer and several of the practitioners who are right now in Quincy, Idaho, I believe it is, and they're doing magical things with EFT and working with a group of people who have been struggling with weight loss for a really long time. And they're bringing their techniques and their tools and their stories and experiences to you so that I can share with you the amazing magic of the power of this very, very simple stress relief technique. I am going to be starting my Curvy and Confident Coaching Club the week of April 22nd, and I'm going to be putting a survey up for you on Twitter to check in to find out from you what day is best for you and the level of support that you're looking for. It's a tremendous range. It goes from $19.95 and up, all the way to several hundred dollars a month. I'm here for you. I have walked some really, really tough miles, and I've learned a lot of lessons that will help you to change the way that you show up in your life. I'm here to help you by holding a space for you to be powerful, more powerful in your life. I am so looking forward to talking with you and hearing from you and sharing your stories. I'd like to end with each week, what I like to do is I like to pull a part from my book. At the very, very end, I have what is called the Juicy Woman Checklist. And these are the things that I want you, to get the book. You can go to thejuicywoman.com. The title of the book is Lovin' the Skin You're In, The Juicy Woman's Guide to Making Peace with Food and Friends with Your Body. And this particular week, what I want you to do is I want you to be really, really mindful of the stress that's coming up in your life. Every time you reach for that donut, try and jam a Twinkie in your mouth, feel the need to go for a second helping of mashed potatoes, or, you know, swipe your hand across your coworker's candy dish because you feel like you have to have whatever it is. Pay attention. Look at that as a signal, as your body's way of saying, hey, 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 let's throw up the white flag. Something's going on. I need you to look at this. I want you to look beyond the food. The problem is not the food. It's not what you're eating. It's what's eating you. Stress. Be mindful of the stress. Okay? Until we meet again, have an amazing, amazing week. And if you want to check in with me one more time, any questions, my number is 760-888-5736. Okay, have a great day. Bye, Juicy Woman.